For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Correa, filling in for Bob Levicky. The court says Confederate statues are war memorials, a guilty plea for rioting, hepatitis A on the rise, and making sense of the legal wrangling over the pipeline. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, April the 30th, 2019. A judge has ruled that the Confederate statues in downtown Charlottesville are officially protected under state law. Judge Richard Moore ruled that the statues of Robert E. Lee and Thomas Stonewall Jackson are war memorials and therefore cannot be removed by the city without permission from the state. All of this stems from a lawsuit against both current and former city councilors who voted to remove those two Confederate statues back in 2017. Don Gathers is the former chair of the Blue Ribbon Commission that advised Charlottesville city councilors to relocate the statues. He said he disagrees with the judge's ruling, but hopes the city will still be able to relocate the statues out of downtown. One of the attorneys for the plaintiffs in this case says he's pleased with Moore's ruling and he believes it's a major point for his side. Judge Moore concludes his letter saying that this ruling is only one aspect of the lawsuit and that it's far from over or decided. Both sides are expected back in court tomorrow for a status hearing. A California man has pleaded guilty to conspiracy to riot at the August 2017 Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. The Daily Progress reports that Thomas Gillen pleaded guilty Monday in U.S. District Court in Charlottesville in connection with the August 2017 white supremacist rally and other political rallies in California. Last November, a grand jury indicted Gillen and three others, accusing them of committing violent acts during a torchlit march at the University of Virginia and the Unite the Right rally in August 2017. Authorities say all four men are members of the Rise Above movement, a militant white supremacist group that trains in fighting techniques. All four admitted to attending the rally and other demonstrations in California to, quote, incite and commit acts of violence. The Virginia Department of Health issued an alert earlier this month about an increase in hepatitis A cases across the country. WHSV reports that the uptick has also been recorded in Northwest Virginia, including the Shenandoah Valley, according to Dr. Laura Cornegay with the Central Shenandoah Health District. She says the outbreak has been concentrated among high-risk groups. According to the VDH, those groups include people who were recently incarcerated, are homeless, use drugs, or are men who have sex with other men. Symptoms include fatigue, yellowing of the skin or eyes, nausea, vomiting, and dark urine. In Virginia, the VDH reported a 132% increase in hepatitis A cases between January and April 2019. The best way to prevent hepatitis A, according to Dr. Cornegay, is with a vaccine. The College of William and Mary plans to erect a memorial to people who were enslaved at the centuries-old school. The Washington Post reports that the memorial is designed to evoke a hearth and serve as a meeting place to reflect on the past. The design was announced Friday and is the latest endeavor by the university in Williamsburg to research and publicize the role slavery played there. School officials launched an international design contest last year for the memorial and received more than 80 entries. The winning entry is called Hearth. It was designed by 2011 William & Mary graduate William Sender. He now works at an architecture firm in North Carolina. He said he was struck by the role of fire in the enslaved community. Nearly a third of Virginia's adult population is categorized as having obesity. A new statewide plan is looking to address the issue, as Virginia Public Radio's Mallory Nopain reports.
Aaliyah Gaskins is with Prevention Connections, a nonprofit that promotes healthy lifestyles. She never refers to someone as being obese, but rather says they have obesity.
Obesity is a disease that is often stigmatized, and people think, well, if you are overweight or obese, then it must be because you made the choice to be that way.
And while individual behaviors, how much we eat, how much we exercise, contribute to obesity, Gaskins says there are often environmental factors influencing those choices that are outside of people's control.
If I live in a neighborhood that doesn't have any grocery stores or doesn't have any options for fresh fruits and vegetables, I may want to make the healthy choice, but that becomes a really difficult choice when those options aren't available.
Recognizing those barriers is at the heart of a statewide plan to tackle obesity, unveiled this weekend at the 6th Annual Weight of the State Convention. It enlists doctors, parents, and local officials to promote healthier lifestyles and environments with prevention as a top priority. I'm Mallory Nopain.
And finally today, the headlines can get confusing quickly. Court A stays permit B, Party C appeals ruling D, Agency X reissues permit Y. In this feature, WMRA's Andrew Jenner brings us up to speed on the complicated landscape of environmental challenges to the Atlantic Coast Pipeline.
If you lived anywhere in Virginia a few decades ago, chances are good you've seen a rusty-patched bumblebee go buzzing by. Good luck finding one today, though. Once abundant in the eastern U.S., the bee began disappearing in the 90s. Scientists don't really know why. What they do know is that it's almost extinct. And in 2017, the rusty-patched bumblebee went on the endangered species list. There's still one spot east of the Appalachians, however, where a few of these bees are consistently found, Highland and Bath counties, right along the proposed route of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline.
The Endangered Species Act says that a federal agency cannot jeopardize the continued existence of an endangered or threatened species.
Patrick Hunter is an attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center and part of the legal team arguing a case against a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service permit granted to the pipeline developers. One part of their argument is that the pipeline will have, quote, severe impacts on this globally significant population.
If that's the case, then FERC cannot issue a permit for this project as it is designed, because FERC cannot issue a permit that is going to jeopardize a species.
FERC is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which has ultimate authority over the pipeline. Oral arguments in the case involving the rusty-patched bumblebee will be heard on May 5th before the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond. It's just one of the many federal suits brought by environmental groups challenging the Atlantic Coast Pipeline's proposed route, and sometimes its entire premise. Lewis Freeman is the executive director of the Allegheny Blue Ridge Alliance, a coalition of more than 50 groups that oppose the pipeline.
We believe that it is an unneeded project and one that, even if needed, should not be built where the company who are sponsoring it wish to build it, through the mountains of Virginia and West Virginia.
Every foot of this project has undergone rigorous examination.
The pipeline's developers and its opponents have completely opposite views on its environmental impact. Carl Nedanine is a spokesman for Dominion Energy, the lead partner of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline.
Been the most thoroughly reviewed infrastructure project in the history of our region. There's no other project that has been developed with greater attention to protecting the environment.
Dominion says, well, we're going to build the most environmentally responsible pipeline possible. We don't believe they can, and we believe that the route that they have chosen is disastrous in that respect.
And so the two sides have wound up in court a lot. If you're keeping score, there have been 9 environmental suits against the pipeline so far in federal courts. All of them challenge permits from state or federal regulators. 3 cases are active, including the endangered species one against the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Then, there's a challenge of a state-issued permit to build a gas compressor station in Buckingham County, and another case, now in briefing, to invalidate the FERC certificate authorizing all 600 miles of the pipeline through 3 states. In December, courts threw out a different permit from the U.S. Forest Service, though that case may not be over.
We are appealing that decision to the United States Supreme Court.
That'll happen sometime in May, Nedanine says. Finally, environmental groups have gotten courts to invalidate 2 National Park Service permits, a previous U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service permit, and 1 from the Army Corps of Engineers. They've also lost once, when a federal court upheld yet another pipeline permit issued by the Virginia State Water Control Board. Without any single one of these permits, construction can't move forward. And at current count, the pipeline lacks key permits from at least 4 federal agencies. Here's Hunter again.
As of right now, they do not have a viable route.
Last year, before some of these rulings, about 35 miles of the pipeline were completed. Since December, however, work has been on hold.
It's unfortunate that these delays are avoidable, and bring no net protection to the environment beyond what we've already provided. They're just raising the cost of the project and delaying the supply of much-needed energy to the customers.
When first proposed 5 years ago, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline was supposed to cost $4.5 to $5 billion and be finished last year. Now Dominion says it will cost up to $7.5 billion and be in service by early 2021. Though encouraged by the mostly favorable court rulings so far, Freeman isn't ready to declare victory.
I've been involved in public policy work since I was in my early 20s. I make the analogy often that it's like a baseball game. You know, a team can score 4 or 5 runs in the first inning, but the game isn't over until it's over, and that's how I feel about this project.
For Dominion, which is also now lobbying Congress for legislative solutions to the pipeline's legal problems, it's all simply a matter of time.
We have a great deal of confidence that we'll complete the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. We have the resources, we have the determination, and we have the need. We'll get it built.
Pipeline opponents aren't so sure. And here, at least, is a pretty safe bet. These folks are going to keep seeing a lot of each other in court. For WMRA News, I'm Andrew Jenner.
And I'm Christopher Correa. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your Tuesday.